This week on Pop of Culture, we preview a Muncie concert series that's free.
I just love the stage at Cannon Commons downtown. I knew that that could be a great stage for the performances of any type of artist in any genre.
Later in the show, we'll learn what a human library is.
So I thought, okay, here's a Black woman who's a police officer who doesn't fit the typical stereotype of police officer at all. And she just said, yeah, she'll be a book.
Coming up, Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Become a member today at indianapublicradio.org.
From Indiana Public Radio, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. We're right in the middle of summer concert season, so we're going to start today on that beat. We have Rick Ziegler joining us today to talk about, I think, one of the most popular concert series in the area, and that is the Muncie Three Trails Music Series. Rick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's go back to the beginning of the series. Rick, tell me how all of this came about and got started here in Muncie.
Well, I grew up in Muncie. I originated the series as a way to keep being involved in the music scene in some way. I've been involved in music as a performer, songwriter, and then as a business person. I owned an independent record store, first in Salt Lake City, then in Broad Ripple and Indianapolis. Like I said, I grew up in Muncie, and when I moved back here, I just loved the stage at Cannon Commons downtown. I knew that that could be a great stage for the performances of any type of artist in any genre. And I thought, well, I've got contacts. I have the knowledge that I think I know who would be good to book for the series, but would also be affordable enough that we could book them and still have the concerts be free. Another reason I wanted to keep them free is because, as you probably know, but some people may not, I mean, Muncie still has a town gown divide here. Mm-hmm. It was much worse than when I was growing up. It's much better now. The slogan "Better Together," the Ball State's adopted, is trying to address that. And I thought, well, maybe in some small way, subtle way, this can help contribute to that. That's why the concerts are downtown. Get people from everywhere. I envisioned the series as having two central goals. The first was simply to present great musical artists who are still creating new and original music. I simply wanted to introduce the residents of Muncie and East Central Indiana to fantastic musical artists that they wouldn't otherwise get a chance to see.
Yeah.
Sort of in the popular jargon, I also thought it could contribute to Muncie's quality of place, as arts offerings are key elements in what makes communities attractive. The second goal of the series was my hope that the Three Trails could become popular enough that we could help make people aware of the other recreational, artistic, cultural attractions already existing in our city, particularly including the three trails that give the series its name, the White River Greenway, the Cardinal Greenway, and the Muncie Arts and Culture Trail. And indeed, our slogan for the series is explore the trails, enjoy the music.
I love that. And I love that tie-in because that's certainly something you didn't have to do at the outset. You didn't have to tie it to the trails. But I loved how you are increasing awareness of these options, these wonderful trail options in the community, in addition to providing a great night out of music. So when did this series start? And what were you thinking as you put that first summer together as far as the music choices?
Well, and it started in 2013, so this year is going to be our 11th year. All I knew about the music choices was that I wanted to present a diverse range of artists across genres. We've had artists doing jazz, bluegrass, blues, rock, gospel, world. I've probably forgotten some soul, R&B, gospel, all those. And I just knew I wanted each concert in any given year to be different.
Yeah. And what has the response been over the years to this concert series, Rick?
Well, I mean, it's grown in attendance. You know, we started out with about 200, 250 people at each show, and now we're at about 1,200 people at each show. So I'm hoping that the reason why that's happened is because we've established a reputation for bringing in good artists, regardless of genre. I mean, I would say probably 75% of the people that come to the concerts have no idea about who the artist is, but yes, they've just come to rely on the fact that, oh, this will probably be pretty good, so we'll come. We also get people from outside the area to come. I mean, I try to book well-known artists, critically acclaimed artists. So we do get people coming in from out of town. We've had people come from Ohio, Kentucky, Illinois, all over Indiana, Michigan, even Canada, to come to the concerts because they're free. I mean, that was one of the things in making the concerts free. I thought, well, we'll get people coming from outside because they don't have to spend money on tickets. Maybe they'll spend money on a restaurant or in a gallery or just walking the trails or something like that. Mm-hmm. So,
and the concerts are, because obviously the artists have to be paid. So, and the money is coming out of the foundation, your foundation, correct? And then in addition to some sponsorships?
Well, the money comes from a lot of different sources. Yeah. I mean, I wanted to keep these free.
Yes.
I went out and I raised money. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Ball Brothers Foundation, George and Francis Ball Foundation, Sherman and Marjorie Ziegler Foundation, the Community Foundation, they all contribute, as well as businesses like Defer Varan, Pride Mark Construction. You can go to our website, www.muncie3trails.com. You can see all the contributors. You can find out details about all the artists we've had in the past, and of course, the artists that we're presently having, including audio and video clips of the artists, and just more details about the series in general. We're also on Facebook.
Yeah, I love that it's a community effort. It has absolutely become a community effort, that it's something that everybody supports, whether financially or showing up to each and every one of those concerts. I know that it has become quite the tradition, and I know people really look forward to those. Speaking of the concerts, we are getting ready for this year's 2024 season. Rick, can you tell us a little bit about the artists that will be making their way here this summer?
Sure. This year, just like every year, we're having four concerts downtown in Cannon Commons. I do want to say, before getting the artists for this year, I want to mention that next year, for the first time, we're going to expand the series to seven concerts, because three of those concerts will be at the newly constructed Brown Family Amphitheater up here at Ball State. President Mearns contacted me and said, would you consider putting some of the concerts up here? And I said, as long as it doesn't take away from what's downtown, I'd be happy to do so, as long as you help finance them. And he was generous with that.
I love this idea.
So next year we'll have seven concerts.
But wonderful.
This year are four concerts. They're all on Saturdays. They all begin at 7 p.m. with the headliner going on at 8. And they're all at Cannon Commons downtown. Cornerstone is our rain venue when we need it.
Yes.
The first concert will feature acclaimed country blues guitarist Josh the Reverend Payton. He's bringing his Big Damn Band, yes, to Cannon Commons to open our series on Saturday, July 27th. Reverend Payton is recognized as one of the world's foremost country blues fingerstyle pickers. He plays the bass with his thumb while picking the lead. His talent has drawn rave notices. He's had multiple Blues Music Award nominations, including in 2021 for Best Blues Rock Artist. The other thing about Reverend Payton's Big Damn Band, I don't just pick artists who I think the music is good. They've got to be good live. Oh, I can personally testify, yes, that Reverend Payton's Big Damn Band is a great live show. They, yes, played the Warped Tour. They played overseas in 37 countries. They play about 300 shows a year. So this will be a great show. The Reverend and his bandmates, his wife Breezy Payton on washboard, and Max Centney on drums, that includes a 5-gallon maple syrup bucket. Mm-hmm. They're also Indiana natives.
Yes. Great, great band. And this is the kind of band that will get you out of your lawn chair.
That's right. and local group Love Sick Moan will open the show.
Nice.
And this show is sponsored by local law firm Defer Varan.
Gotcha. There may be, I don't know, one or two people that maybe have not been to a Three Trails concert.
I think there's more than that. I encourage people to come out and try, especially if they see there's an artist in the genre of music,
yes,
they like.
Yes. I was going to say, what would you say to the folks out there that haven't experienced?
I would say, you know, I love it when up in front of the stage, there's little kids dancing, mm-hmm. and then there's people from their parents' generation dancing, yes. and then there's senior citizens dancing yes. all at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's a great family atmosphere, and I think people say, oh, well, that was fun. Yes. I'll just try the next time, and now we just have regulars to come. Doesn't matter what type of music it is. They're just going to come and have a good time and listen to music. And it doesn't cost you anything.
I was just going to say that. I think the important thing to remember if you're thinking about, should I go? It's free.
It's free.
Why not? Why not introduce yourself to some new music this summer? Rick, thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything else that we need to know about the concert series?
Just again, the first concert doesn't start till the end of July. So just... keep it in mind, and go to Muncie3Trails.com just to keep informed.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Rick.
Thank you for having me.
That's Rick Ziegler of the Muncie 3 Trails Music Series. You'll hear from him again as we preview the other concerts in the series. In June, we learned about the Human Library, where readers can check out books who are really volunteers sharing their stories. We spoke with Peggy Lewis, the depot manager for the Central Indiana branch. Peggy, thanks for joining us. And should I call you like one of the head librarians of Human Library, or what's your official title?
Well, my official title is I'm a depot manager. Now, that word depot is not really something that we use so much in America mm-hmm. to present like... Basically, what I am is the regional librarian, maybe the head regional librarian.
Yeah.
But my title is a depot manager for Human Library Central Indiana.
Okay. Let's start at the beginning, Peggy, and tell us what the Human Library is all about.
Okay. The Human Library is something that happens at events. We're really event-based. Mm-hmm. So we're not a brick and mortar library, and we're not about tangible books that you're going to, you know, black and white copies of books, because you check out a book, but our books are humans. And the reason we have this is that our books have stories to tell that have to do with prejudice, bias, stigma, challenges. Things that may not affect, they do affect all of us in our daily lives, but we may not think about them all the time. So chance to sit down with somebody and break those stigmas, biases, stereotypes that we all have. Mm-hmm. And so the Human Library is a place where we create a safe place where you can sit down and have a conversation about that.
I love that. And what is the history of the Human Library? I understand it didn't start here. So talk about its origins a little bit, Peggy.
Sure. Sure. It started 24 years ago. Well, next year will be our 25th anniversary, I believe. It started in Copenhagen, Denmark. And it was kind of a challenge to the community to create something that would work to... heal divisiveness, mm-hmm. something that we know about today.
Yes.
And to bring people together, to really to debunk those stereotypes and myths about each other so that we'd have a better understanding of each other. So our founder, Ronnie Abergale, got together with some friends and they applied for a grant to do this festival over 3 days where they would bring human books together with people and they would just have conversations, not knowing whether or not this would work or not. Well, it was a huge success. People loved it. They said, we have to have more than that. Mm-hmm. And so it's become now where, gosh, we're in over 80 countries. We exist. We're across the states and we do these events like I've just told you about where, you know, you sit down and talk to someone. And we now do lots and lots and lots of work with corporations to do some of their diversity and their DEI work with them. So it's I am enamored with all of the corporations that will bring this in for their employees.
That's awesome. Peggy, what made you decide to get involved with this organization?
Well, it's kind of a fun story. A friend and I were taking a trip down to Mississippi to do some volunteer work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a long drive. And so we had said, you know, let's bring the other one something to entertain them while the other person's driving. And my friend had brought along an article, and it was an article about the Human Library, which I'd never heard about before. This was about 5-6 years ago. I sat there in the car somewhere in Tennessee reading this article, and I just looked at her and I said, I have got to bring this to our community. Like, every community needs it, but I want this to happen in Muncie.
Wow.
And that's, I just got, the fire was built right then.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm going to make it happen.
I love that. So tell me about when you started it, what that process was like, and how that first library event went for you.
So I didn't know what I was doing, because you have to apply to do this. I mean, there's an application process, because obviously this is a, they have to protect their what they have, their intellectual property. And so my friend and I put in an application, and it took a long time because it's a very, very, very small organization. And at the time, I think there were only 4 people working there. So it took some time, and I thought, well, I'm just going to keep on plodding along and make this happen. And I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but I would talk to people and say, you know, I want to do this thing, and give them that 30-second elevator pitch about stereotypes and stigma and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And thinking, like, would you be interested in doing this with me? And people said, yes.
Wow.
I was flabbergasted. People said, yes, this sounds like this is something we need. So I got started building what I call my bookshelf of books and put together, I went to Minatrista and I said, I want to do this thing. And they said, boy, you know, library stuff, books, people, this is all down just right what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, sure, you can do that here. So they've become this partner that we've had since then. I just love that we were able to have some of our events there. And so I just started building it a little bit by little bit. But here's the part that is so exciting to me. So we finally got the okay to do this, and we set up a date. And I had to train these books, because the Human Library believes very strongly that our books need to be trained so that they're safe, and so that the readers are in a safe environment.
Mm.
And that we're all staying on message, you know. They are not paid. They're all volunteers. We want them to be comfortable. So I set up this training, and it just so happened to coincide with the time that Ronnie, who I mentioned, our CEO, was going to be at Lilly in Indianapolis. And he said, I'll come and train your books.
Wow.
What? Oh, really? So you took any of our books that have been here since the beginning, and they take great pride in the fact that they were trained by the top boss.
Wow.
And because of that, he's always had a really soft spot for Muncie and for our depot here. So since the beginning, we've just had a great experience and a great welcome here in the community. That time, we were shocked. There were several professors and people who brought their classes. So we had like 85 people come and read books that day.
Wow.
It was like nothing we had expected. And that was just, it was just a wonderful start for us.
That's fantastic. Peggy, I'm really curious about some of those early human books in your collection. Can you tell me about those individuals who showed up and were willing to participate in this from jump?
Yeah, yeah. People often ask me, how do you get people to, I mean, these are sensitive topics that we're talking about, right? How do you get people to do this? One of my favorite stories is this one time I was pumping gas down on Jackson Street somewhere, and up across the pumps pulls up this police car. And I am kind of an extroverted introvert. I mean, it's just like, I just like, Peggy, go for it. I walked around the pump and I said, it's just a really random thing, but I'm doing this thing that's called the Human Library. And I don't know if you'd be interested, but we're here to, you know, debunk stereotypes and kind of combat prejudice. And she looked at me, the police officer, she looked at me and she said, sure, I can do that.
Wow.
And I went, what? So I said, now this gets to the behind, like, since I'm the depot manager, I'm very protective of my books. And I do think they're my books. I mean, they're all my people, my family. So I thought, okay, here's a Black woman who's a police officer who doesn't fit the typical stereotype of police officer at all. And she just said, yeah, she'll be a book.
Wow.
So I thought, okay, that's good. I had other people who just said, you know, you need to talk to Peggy Lewis. She's doing this thing. And people would contact me. So that first event, oh my gosh, we had so many, I think we had 30 books there that day. And so obviously the police officer, we had people transgender, LGBTQ, we had a couple, and that's kind of a sad thing to say, but a couple of survivors of human trafficking, addicts, business people who might be in a stereotypical situation. Today we have, you know, a couple of ministers. We have, oh boy, the list goes on. Parents of LGBTQ kids, which is so important right now for people to be able to talk about, to talk to someone. So yeah, the list goes kind of on.
Yeah. Peggy, I'm looking at the list of some of the titles that you've had in your library, and it's fascinating. Do you mind if I share a few that are on the list?
Sure.
Dyslexia, a child of addicts, a survivor of suicide loss, intersex, survivor of domestic abuse, OCD, ex-Jehovah Witness. This is quite a diverse list of books. What has the response been when you welcome readers to come in and, as you've described it before, unjudge someone based on these conversations?
Well, the way that an event works is you come in and you look at our title of books, looking at, you know, whoever's available that day.
Yes.
And you sit down for a half hour conversation with that person. And I'll come back to saying about a conversation in a moment, but you sit down with that. So at an event, you know, you may think, oh, I'm just going to pop in for a half hour. So you get to check out one book. Typically those people go, oh my gosh, I've got to come back or I'm going to stay.
Wow.
And then if somebody can stay there, maybe three, or they've checked out three books during that time, they go, I need more of this. So the response has been overwhelming. There's so many reasons a person might check out one of those titles. You know, maybe they check it out a title because you think, you know, that's kind of sounds like my life. And you're going to talk to somebody maybe for some affirmation of how I'm similar or different. Maybe you're talking to somebody, you check out a book because you have somebody in your family who fits that title. And you think, I don't know how to ask them questions.
Ah, yes.
And now you have a safe place to do that. Or maybe it's just plain curiosity because, you know, I've never talked to anybody before who's polyamorous and I don't get that at all.
Right.
And so now I have a chance to ask that. We often say it's like, we probably all went through this as little kids, when you're in the store with your parent and you're walking along and you see a person maybe who's tattooed head to toe and you go, mom, and your mom goes, shh, that's not polite. And we always say, here, this is the time to ask those questions, because if you don't ever ask them, you're never going to understand.
Right.
And so it's that safe place to ask those questions. So the response has been, give me more.
Wow. That's wonderful. Talk a little bit about the impact on the books themselves. What are you hearing after someone decides to participate as a book and really kind of open them? You're opening yourself up to a complete stranger in most cases, right? Talk to me about the response you're getting from some of your book titles.
Sure. So I think one of the things that speaks for itself is many of our books have been here since our first event in 2019.
Wow.
And so they keep coming back. We say that this is not therapy, but it's therapeutic. And that would be true for both the book and the reader. The books love it when they get questions they've never thought about before or have never answered before. because it really is time for self-reflection for them. They feel, well, I'll give you an example. We have one book who publishes under suicide loss. Mm-hmm. And that's a very, very emotionally charged subject, obviously.
Yes.
And it's very tiring for her to do that. And at one point, sometime back, she said, you know, I just don't know if I can do this. Maybe I just want to be a librarian for a while. And we talked about it. And I said, well, tell me about your readings. When you've been talking to somebody, you know, how does that feel? And she said, well, usually they check me out because they've had some experience and it's very helpful to them. Mm-hmm. And I go, okay. And how does that make you feel? Well, I feel like they really need to talk about it. Okay. So it kind of went on that way. And by the end, she said, okay, I'm going to keep publishing.
Oh,
it's so necessary. It's there for her. So, you know, they can feel like it's a real service. Mm-hmm. And they realize that they're doing good work.
What are some of the books, the titles that have impacted you most?
Oh my gosh.
As a librarian.
Oh my gosh. I am, like I told you, I'm very protective of these and these are my family.
Yeah.
I think let me go with the ones who have blown me away the most.
Okay.
Maybe because of how they've dealt with their lives, maybe how they came into the situation. It could be a number of different things, but I think that our survivor of childhood human trafficking, mm-hmm. I don't know how you can listen to that and not be just totally moved by that.
Wow.
We have a few books now who are on polyamory. Mm-hmm. I have appreciated them because they have taught me so much about something I didn't know about.
Yeah.
We have some books who finding the depth of their experience and how it's like as a lifelong challenge for them. Any of our survivor stories obviously are hugely important to anyone. Our books who are addicts of one sort or another, mm-hmm. who, boy, you and I mean, you'd never talk to that person on the street and say, oh, I get it, you're an addict, because they don't fit that profile.
Mm.
And I think that that's really important for us to understand just in our general population, to have more empathy and to celebrate each other.
Right.
I could just go on. No, every single one of them is important and I love them all.
Yeah, it's interesting because as you were talking, that old saying, you can't judge a book by its cover, keeps uh-huh. coming to mind, because how true is that? There could be two people that have, in essence, maybe perhaps gone through the same thing, but their stories, their reactions, their resilience, their choosing to tell their story is going to be completely different. And so many times I think we, as people who may not know, maybe we haven't read that book before, we may come in with our own preconceived ideas, right, about what that story is going to be. And I think it's really important to get in there and really read or have a conversation with someone yeah. and really hear the story.
And you're so right. I mean, we all have preconceived ideas. Mm-hmm. We all have conscious or unconscious bias.
Yes.
I don't believe anyone who tells me, oh, I'm not biased at all, because I'm sorry. We all do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wear that unjudged someone t-shirt all the time.
Yes.
And I know that I still have those. We were raised in an environment that helped us build those.
Yes.
We can't escape them. We can break them.
Yes.
And we can build understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But we have them. I think it's important to identify with that.
Yes.
And I was also going to say that our books have helped me understand that we are all complex individuals. So I think one of our transgender books, I believe it was, said one time, the fact that I'm transgender is the least interesting and important thing about me.
Wow.
And I went, wow.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, that's true. We are complex individuals. Absolutely. As human beings.
Absolutely. So, Peggy, the ultimate question, because I'm sure a lot of people listening right now are thinking to themselves, either A, I really want to go to one of these library events, or B, I think I would be a good book title. So let's deal with the first one, Peggy. Are there human library events coming up that the public can attend?
Yes. Our very next one happens to be here in Muncie.
Great.
And it's on June 22nd. It is at Marion Hunt Library, and it will be from 1 to 4. So I'm really looking forward to that one. The next one here in town is, we'll be at the, Muncie, the Pride event on August 31st.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that'll be kind of an outdoor festival setting where you can come by. We'll shorten our time a little bit there. But still it's the same experience.
Wonderful. And do you need to pre-register to participate? Do we just show up? What? Tell me about the scene once we get there.
So we don't pre-register, which always makes it a little hectic from the organizational side. But that's fine. We take anyone who comes.
Great.
And I would also want to mention this is always free. The Human Library is always, public events are always free.
Great.
So you come and drop in. You don't have to be there at 1 o'clock to start and stay till four. If you can read one book, you could come at 1:45 and read a book and go home. Or we'd encourage you to stay and check out more. When you get there, you are going to be greeted by a registration librarian who will ask you to sign in. And it is agreeing to our rules. Mm-hmm. Simple things like you will be respectful. You'll return our books in the same shape emotionally and physically that they were checked out. There's no recording. And it's kind of like Las Vegas, where whatever happens in that reading stays in that reading.
Yes.
So you agree to those things.
Okay.
And then you'll be shown over to a board that has, you know, a range of those titles that you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You check out your book. And another librarian will take you to a place to sit down and begin that conversation. And when you're done, a librarian will come and pick you up and take you back to where you started. I did want to mention those conversations. They're not scripted, because everyone is different. It depends upon your questions, what you bring to the conversation.
Right. Yeah. What you want to get out of the book.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Wonderful. And what if someone, Peggy, is interested in perhaps becoming a title, a part of your collection? What can they do?
I would love to talk to them. And they can go on to, we have a Facebook page, and that's Human Library Central Indiana.
Okay.
They could message me there. That would probably be the best way, is to go through Facebook to find us. And then I would set up a time to sit down over coffee or lemonade, and we would have a discussion about that and let you know what it takes to become a book. Another way, and I do want to say this, another way to become a book or a librarian, because we need librarians as well.
Okay.
Anywhere we're out giving information, you can also stop by and say, hey, you know, I'm interested in being a book or a librarian.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, it certainly sounds like your collection is growing. And I thank you so much, Peggy, for taking some time to talk with me about it today.
Well, thank you so much. We love getting the message out. We often hear, oh, hey, did you see that thing on Facebook? There's this thing called the Human Library. We really need one of those in this area. And I go, we have one. We're here.
Yes.
And so talking to you today is really helpful to us to get the message out, to check us out on Facebook and or humanlibrary.org. That's the bigger group. And I really appreciate this opportunity to let people know about the Human Library.
Oh, we are happy to do it. Thanks again, Peggy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Human Library is a nonprofit that allows readers to speak with volunteers who share their personal experiences with stigmatized concepts. Peggy Lewis is depot manager for the Central Indiana branch. We spoke to her in June. Hey, Kara, do you crochet?
I try to crochet.
What does that mean?
It's kind of difficult. It has been for me in the past. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah. Oh, no. No. Now, if you crochet, then I will buy it. I mean, I love to have objects, things that are crocheted.
That's perfect, because this week for What Are You Working On? We listened back to an artist looking to go professional.
Oh, perfect.
We're here today with crochet artist Dawn Goff, and we want to find out, what are you working on, Dawn?
I am working on a zillion things. I am currently a vendor at the Minnetrista Market, and so making all kinds of tank tops and sweaters and scrunchies and headbands and made out of crochet, totally crochet.
Oh, that's wonderful. Sounds like a lot of summer gear.
Very much.
So can you describe one of the tank tops you mentioned?
I have a tank top that's kind of hippie. It's got retro daisies on the front and angles down on the side. The current ones I'm working on are like neon rainbow colors with a whole bunch of fringe on the bottom. I had a friend comment and say that it was more of like a music festival shirt where you're shaking around and all the fringe shakes around. So that's what I'm currently working on.
Okay. That sounds like something that can be useful for the summer music series here.
Absolutely. Yes.
In Muncie or wherever you're listening to music.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So there is something that I saw in your booth at Minnetrista that I found very interesting. And it was a plant.
My hanging plant. Yes.
Crocheted.
It was a crochet hanging plant. Yes. I'm in the works to make more of those with interchangeable plants that come out of the hanger. So you can change them out for whatever you feel today or a holiday. You can put a poinsettia in there if you want. That's one of the fun things I'm working on as well.
So where do you get your plant inspiration?
I am also a plant lady. I have 42 plants in my bedroom alone. So, yes, all live plants, love them of all. And so, you know, if one dies, you go, I wish I had that again. And you just learn how to crochet it.
That's fabulous.
That's fun.
Well, what attracted you to crocheting at first?
My grandma taught me how to knit when I was a child.
Okay, you said knit. Okay,
knit, so. Yes. And then when I met my husband, the very first day I went to meet his parents, his mother was crocheting on the couch. And I said, I've never learned how to do that. And she said, sit down here beside me and learn. And that afternoon I learned, and I went home that night and crocheted a blanket.
That's pretty amazing. Can you share with us a little bit about the differences between knitting and crocheting?
I wish I could tell you a whole lot. crocheting, you can do a lot more, in my experience, different techniques, different textures, different designs. Just in the stitch that you use. Crocheting works up way faster than knitting. People are more familiar with like blankets being crocheted because they tend to be, you can knit lighter, you can knit, or you can crochet with heavy yarn and make a nice big comfy blanket or sweater or something like that.
Okay. Well, what kind of things do you like to make when you crochet?
Stuff you can wear. and that's new to me because I've always been, I've done the baskets and the dishcloths and the blankets and stuff. But when I learned about a sweater, I was turned on. And cardigans are my favorite. I live in cardigans in the winter, fall. So you can do any color, any size, any length, short sleeve, long sleeve. Currently, I'm doing a lot of, everybody's probably familiar with the traditional granny square that grandmas used to make. You can turn that into anything. So I've made a waistcoat. I've made halter tops. I've made skirts. I've made vests, sweater, just all kinds of stuff. So it's just fun to do and wear and see other people do it too.
Now, for those of us who don't know about the granny square, what does that look like?
A square. But it starts in the center and it just gets bigger as it goes and it just looks like a square. And then you make a whole bunch of squares and you sew them together to make whatever you want.
Beautiful. I live in a cardigan myself in the fall and the winter. And recently I saw your work at Minnetrista Morning Market, and I saw a lot of really vibrant colors. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about your color sensibility and some of the yarns you use.
Okay. In the winter, I normally do earth tone colors. I'm a hippie at heart, very barefoot all the time. So I like earthy colors. So greens, browns, that kind of thing in the winter. In the summer, real lightweight cotton. This year, I'm doing a lot of vibrant colors, as you said. I'm doing a lot right now of like rainbow patterns, specifically for Pride Month. Just kind of get that out there. But I have younger daughters as well. They're in their mid-30s who like to wear fun designs and fun colors. And so it's a good way to show off your personality that way. So it's fun. I mean, it's way fun to like change colors and look at how the colors are coming together and how bright they are and how happy it makes you just looking at those. So yeah, that's what I like.
That's one of the things that attracted me to your area. That was this peace and love vibe was coming from your being.
Yeah, I like that. That was my very first one ever. My first ever market, ever being out in public with my stuff.
Wonderful. Yeah. So do you plan to do more of that?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, is there places that we can find your work online in person?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and Facebook, Dawn Renee Crochet. I don't have a place to purchase yet. My daughter is on my tail to get that done. But anybody who wants to email me and say, hey, you know, I really want to commission you to make me this in this color for this event or whatever, I'll absolutely do it. I love doing stuff like that.
Ooh. Well, that's pretty, that's tantalizing. You do commissions.
You give me a call.
So what's your email address?
Dawn.Renee, R-E-N-E-E, .crochet@gmail.com.
Okay. Well, now, are there some other things you'd like to tell us about crochet, your art?
I can tell you that most of my life, it has been crocheting pieces for family or friends. For birthdays, Christmas, holidays, things like that. And then my daughter, who is a jewelry maker out in Oregon, kind of pushed me to step out of my comfort zone and do some crochet for public sale. And once I started doing that, I absolutely fell in love. I don't have enough time to crochet. What I would love to do is to do it enough and sell enough that I could quit my regular corporate job and then just crochet for a living. That would be awesome. Out on my back porch on my rocking chair with my glass of iced tea, but I'd be good.
And so you say you like to crochet outside on the porch.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do in the winter?
Crochet inside with a cup of coffee.
So anywhere is anywhere, a good place
yes.
to crochet.
Anywhere. Yes, ma'am. That is absolutely true.
Well, will we be able to find you at the Minnetrista Market?
Yes, I will be there once a month because I just kind of stuck my toe in.
Wonderful. Well, we really appreciate you being here today, Dawn.
Well, thank you for having me. This was fun.
Good. Kara, it is time for the calendar, an opportunity to look at just some of the great things going on in and around pop of culture land. And this is the perfect time to cue that Aussie tune. You know the one I'm talking about. Yep.
I didn't know you were going to do it.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It's Iron Man weekend in Muncie. This year's Iron Man 70.3 in Muncie will include 3 days of activities. On Thursday, July 11th, enjoy a free performance by the Dave Bennett Quartet at 8 p.m. at Cannon Commons. On Friday, July 12th, there's a family picnic at Cannon Commons beginning at 6 p.m. that will include an outdoor screening of Iron Cowboy. And on Saturday, July 13th, it's the big event, the 45th annual triathlon with swimming and biking and running. DowntownMuncie.org is the place to go for more info.
The Come One, Come All Muncie Festival is Saturday, July 13th at Cannon Commons. The free event is noon to 5 p.m. and includes music, activities, and much more.
The Three Rivers Festival is July 12th through 20th in Fort Wayne. The event includes live entertainment, a midway, river excursions, and so much more. The entire schedule can be found at threeriversfestival.org.
Minnetrista Museum and Gardens will have its annual Fairy Sprites and Lights event July 25th through the 27th. Families can enjoy games, crafts, a theater show, live music and dancing, a bubble garden, and more in the enchanted Oakhurst Gardens. And of course, visitors are encouraged to come dressed in their best magical fairy attire as they imagine and play in an enchanted fairy wonderland. Minnetrista.net is the place to go for more magical info.
That is going to be beautiful to look at.
I love that event.
It is always so pretty. The Delaware County Fair is happening now through July 20th. The midway packed with fried foods, rides, games, concerts, crashing cars, and more opens July 15th. More info at DelawareCountyFair.net.
All right. On July 18th, Arts Place in Portland will present the Womand Band. That's hilarious to me. In concert, the show will celebrate women in rock, including Pat Benatar, Joan Jett, Stevie Nicks, and many more. The music will begin at 8 p.m. at Hudson Family Park Amphitheater. MyArtsPlace.org has more details.
And if you have an event Pop of Culture listeners would like to know about, let us know at IndianaPublicRadio.org/Pop of Culture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Become a member today at IndianaPublicRadio.org.
And that's our show. This week was produced by Luke Jones, whose favorite concert series is the one he puts on in his shower.
La, 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 la.
Our show was hosted this week by me, Kara Duquette.
And me, Michelle Kinsey. Pop of Culture is a production of Indiana Public Radio on the beautiful campus of Ball State University.